Genesis 2:11-12. The name of one is Pishon, that is it which compasseth the whole land of Havilah, where there is gold, and the gold of that land is good. There is delium and onyx stone. This is one of the most difficult passages in the writings of Moses, and one which has given rise to the greatest offense in unholy minds. For the real state of the facts recorded, as they now are before our eyes, cannot be denied. The description here given by the sacred historian applies properly to India, which he here calls Havilah, through which the river Pishon, or the Ganges, flows. The other three rivers, Gihon, Hiddekel, and Thral, that is, the Nile, the Tigris, and the Euphrates, are also well known. And it is equally well known that the Nile and the last two rivers have their sources very distant from each other. The great question, therefore, that naturally arises is, since the whole world well knows how far distant these rivers are from each other, how can the account of Moses be reconciled with the facts, when he says that all these rivers issued from one fountain, that is, that they flowed from one source in the Garden of Eden toward the east? For, with respect to the Nile, although its source is unknown, yet the arguments and proofs are plain that it flows from a region in the south, whereas it is quite certain that the Ganges and the Tigris and the Euphrates flow from the north, sources in entirely opposite direction. The account of Moses, therefore, militates against sense and fact as they now are. This state of things has given occasion to many to form conjectures that Eden was the whole world. Though such conjectures are certainly false, yet they would not of themselves, even if true, reconcile the statements of Moses, nor make all plain when he here says that the source of all these rivers was one and the same. And although it is very probable that if Adam had remained in his innocence and his posterity had greatly multiplied in that state of innocency, God would have enlarged this garden correspondingly, yet even that consideration would not justify the supposition that Eden was the whole earth originally, for the sacred text most plainly separates Eden from all the rest of the earth. What shall we say, therefore, concerning this passage of Moses, contrary as it is to sense and experience, as things now are, and on that account so liable to cause offense being taken, especially since Origen and others have built upon it so many marvelous and absurd fables? Some commentators pretend that there is no difficulty at all, nor any liability to offense being taken, and therefore they walk dry-shod, as it were, over this deep sea. Such lack of candor, however, is also highly unbecoming a commentator. My opinion on the matter, which indeed I have already given, is that paradise, which was very soon closed against man on account of sin, and afterwards totally destroyed and swept from the earth by the flood, left not one trace or vestige of its original state remaining, which can now be discovered. I fully believe, as I have stated before, that paradise did exist after the fall of Adam, and that it was known to his posterity, but that it was inaccessible to them on account of the protection of the angel, who, as the text informs us, guarded Eden with a flaming sword. The awful deluge, however, destroyed all things, by which also, as it is written, all the fountains of the great deep were broken up. Genesis 7:11. Who can doubt, therefore, that the fountains of these rivers were also broken up and confounded? As therefore, since the flood, mountains exist where fields and fruitful plains before flourished, so there can be no doubt that fountains and sources of river are now found where none existed before, and where the state of nature had been quite the contrary. For the whole face of nature was changed by that mighty convulsion. Nor do I entertain the least doubt that all those wonders of nature, which are from time to time discovered, are the effects and relics of that same awful visitation, the deluge. In the metallic mines which are now explored are found large logs of wood, hardened into stone, and in masses of stone themselves are perceived various forms of fishes and other animals. With the same confidence, I also believe that the Mediterranean Sea before the deluge was not within the land. My persuasion is that the position which it now occupies was formed by the effects of the terrible flood. So also the space now occupied by the Red Sea was doubtless before a fruitful field, and most probably some portion of this very garden. In like manner, those other large bays, the Gulf of Persia, the Gulf of Arabia, etc., as they now exist, are relic effects of the deluge. Wherefore, we are by no means to suppose that the original source of the rivers, of which we are now speaking, was the same as it is today. But as the earth still exists and brings forth trees and their fruits, etc., and yet these, if compared with those in their original and incorrupt state, are but miserable remnants, as it were, of those former riches which the earth produced when first created, so these rivers remain as relics only of those former noble streams, but certainly not in their primitive position, much less flowing from their original sources. In the same manner, how much excellency has perished from our bodies by sin? Wherefore the sum of the matter under discussion is that we must speak of the whole nature since its corruption as an entirely altered face of things, a face which nature has assumed, first by means of sin, and secondly by the awful effects of the universal deluge. Nor has God ceased to act still in the same way. When he punishes sins, he still curses, at the same time, the earth also. Thus, in the prophet Zephaniah, God threatens that he will consume the fowls of the air and the fishes of the sea, Zephaniah 1:3. Hence, the fact is that many of our rivers have in this age a far less number of fishes than in the memory of our forefathers. The birds also are much fewer in number than what they once were, etc. God threatens also, Isaiah 13, that he will punish in the same way the sins of Babylon. For when men are taken away by God's judgment, the beasts of the earth also disappear, and monsters and destroying wild beasts alone remain, Isaiah 13, verses 21 and 22. For example, Canaan was one of the most fruitful lands, but now it is said to be, as it were, a mere pickle tub of unfruitful saltness, according to the divine threatening in the 107th Psalm. If, then, such calamities are inflicted of God as the punishments of the particular sins of nations, what destruction and desolations must we consider the universal punishment of the flood to have wrought? Let no one be offended, therefore, at Moses saying that four rivers, which are at this day widely distant from each other and have now different fountains, flowed from one source in the Garden of Eden. For as I have here repeatedly observed, we are not to think that the form of the world now is the same as it was before the sin of Adam. Origen was indeed of this opinion himself, and yet he turned aside to the vainest allegories. The Nile indeed exists to this day, so does the Ganges. But as Virgil says concerning the destruction of Troy, a cornfield now flourishes where Troy once stood. So if anyone had seen the Nile and the other great rivers mentioned by Moses in their primitive beauty and glory, he would have beheld them to be far different from what they are now. For not only are their sources altered, but their qualities and their courses are also changed, just as all other creatures are also deformed and corrupted. Hence it is that Peter affirms that the heavens must receive Christ until the times of the restitution of all things, Acts 3:21. For Peter here intimates that which Paul also testifies, that the whole creation was subjected to vanity, Romans 8:20, and that the restitution of all things is to be hoped for, the restitution not of man only, but of the heaven and the earth, of the sun and of the moon, etc. My answer, therefore, to all questioners upon the passage before us is, there is the Nile, there is the Ganges, and there are other rivers still in existence, but they are not now such as they once were. They are not only confounded with respect to their sources, but altered as to their qualities also. In the same manner also, man has indeed feet, eyes, and ears, just as they were created and formed in paradise. But all these same members are miserably corrupted and marred by sin. Adam, before his sin, had eyes the most bright, a smell of the body most pure, refined, delicate, and grateful, a body the most perfectly adapted to generation and to every purpose intended of God, without the least let, hindrance, or obstruction in the performance of those purposes as services in obedience to God. But how far removed from all this aptitude, this service, and this natural vigor are all our members now! Just the same is the present nature of these rivers and of the whole creation, if compared with its original state and condition. Let us look, therefore, in hope and faith for the restitution of all things, not of the soul only, but of the body also, believing that we shall have in that day a body better and more noble even than it was when first created in paradise. For we shall not then be placed in a state of animal life, subject by its nature to alteration and change, but in the state and enjoyment of a spiritual life, that life unto which Adam would have been translated if he had lived without sin. Into the hope of this life Christ brings us by the remission of sins, and thereby makes our condition better and higher than Adam enjoyed, but lost in paradise. The Hebrew verb sab, which Moses here uses, has a very extensive meaning. It signifies to go round, as watchmen go round in a city. Pishon, therefore, or the Ganges, is still in existence, if you speak of its mere name and stream. But if you consider its fertilizing and fructifying qualities, its various other properties, and the course of its waters, even the remnants of the original noble river are not to be found. The land of Havilah is India, situated toward the east. This country is celebrated both in the present passage and in other places in the Scripture as most rich and abundant in every respect, so that at this day the gems and the gold of India are considered the most precious and most noble. I believe, however, according to the phraseology here adopted by Moses, that in the land of Havilah is included Arabia, Felix, and other adjacent regions. When Moses speaks of Delium and the onyx stone, I take these specimens of gems for gems in general, for we find India to abound, even at the present day, not only in jewels of the description mentioned, but in emeralds, sapphires, rubies, garnets, diamonds, etc., for I retain their appellations as they are now used among us. But here again, I would bring back your attention to that which I have before stated, seeing that this region is endowed from above with such a rich abundance of all things, useful and precious, how much more rich, abundant, opulent, and divinely favored must we conclude it to have been in its original state before the sin of the fall? Its present productions and contents can scarcely be called even remnants of its former excellency.